Hello, freaks, and welcome to Radical Research. This is episode 138.5, the short diminutive episodes. So our 0.5s are just these fun little excuses to dive into a subject briefly that may not warrant a full episode, or just another excuse to get more content out, as the kids say. And we have here with us a man you may have heard of if you've listened to Radical Research at any length, Hunter Ginn. He happens to be the co-host, so you should know him. Hunter Ginn has this thing with this band called Chum. Now, Chum released, and correct me if I'm wrong, Hunter, before I turn the mic over to you, but they are from West Virginia.
They are.
Okay. I know two things about Chum. Well, I know three things about Chum. One, I know that they're from West Virginia. Two, I know their one and only album came out on Century Media. Three, I know that you love them so much, and I've never really given them a fair ear. So, turning the mic over to you, what is it you want to express about this band and album? And it obviously it's a mid-90s album. It continues to be pretty great one for you. Like you revisit it regularly. So, yeah, so go. Tell us.
Yeah, no, it's the thing I've always thought. One, I loved it when it came out. It came out in 1996, and I thought it was just a great rock record then. I thought it was a weird thing for Century Media. It seemed almost too commercial for Century Media, even though they were endeavoring in that direction with, like Gathering Mandalion.
And I think if you look through their catalog in the early to mid 90s, they were always seemed to be pretty conscious of not just pigeonholing themselves as a death metal label. That certainly was their
Sure,
bread.
sure. And I don't mean, and I didn't mean to say that, but for me, Chum always seemed like a band with way more commercial potential. And I always thought this record was either released too late or too early.
96. I took another listen to it for the first time in many, many years today, just a couple snippets. It so sounds like something that maybe could have been much more popular in 1996 when it came out. So I think it's the right time, if not a little late. If I'm skewing one way or the other, it's probably on the late side, simply because by 92, 93, major labels were swooping in and signing all this sorts of stuff. And this sort of stuff being, we have to cast a pretty wide net there too, because it could be on the punk side where Nirvana started. It could be on the more alternative rock side, say Smashing Pumpkins influenced and post Smashing Pumpkins type stuff. It could be any number of sounds, but I think we know kind of the general sort of area or umbrella we're talking about here. And Chum falls squarely into that, right?
Does, but they have an uncommonly good vocalist, a really, really soulful vocalist, and I wonder if there's some Epperdisms in his delivery, but I just think the
Sorry,
songs are.
back up. I think you said that nonchalantly, but I think by Epperdisms you mean Joey Epperd of
I
Three.
do mean Joey Epperd, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
But they have a Prince cover on the album "Darling Nikki." It's one of those covers that fits really tightly into the context of the album. Doesn't seem like a novelty at all.
Okay.
Tremendous rhythm section, like greatly produced too. It's just got all the makings of a successful record, and I think it was anything but successful.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about wrong time. I just wonder if it's wrong label. Again, Century Media had Mucky Pup early on, and they had a variety of different things that weren't even close. Some not even metal. But I just feel like, yeah, 96, with the market flooded as it was with this kind of thing, it might have just been a real big gamble for the label, and consequently, yeah, didn't get a lot of attention. You gave it attention. What made you come to it? Other than being an aficionado of this sound and this world, Soundgarden being one of your favorite bands, and in 90s being your decade of development as a listener.
Eula. I don't know that I would even have known about it. And Eula had it on one of his playlists. Back then, Eula was that was the law. Was always like kind of cool in that regard too, and I always identified with him because he, was into all the really musically advanced metal and stuff that I like, but he was also like heavily into Alice in Chains and Soundgarden and The Cure and Lush and all that. And so I don't know, I had a kindred feeling for EULA. And so I just took a chance on it, bought it, and just loved it.
You mentioned great production. Was there a producer of name that produced
No.
it, or no? Okay. And let's see this. The album's called Dead to the World. Is that right? Did they ever follow it up? I don't think they ever did. Do you know anything about them history-wise other than that?
Yeah, they played a couple of reunion shows in Charleston, West Virginia, I think in 2012, 2013,
Wow.
thereabouts.
Okay.
Yeah,
Well, good.
just to do it. Well, it's probably like the Anna Cruces thing, it's St. Louis, West Virginia, it's old friends, come together, and I'm sure they had a following. I mean, I don't think Century Media would have gotten wind back then had they not. Yeah, I think that it's obvious why Century Media chose to include Greetings from the Other Side on one of the Identity compilations, because I'm sure they knew how much commercial potential that had, even though they were probably not, given priority in the track listing. But nonetheless, again, I think that Century Media wouldn't have wasted their time on a band like that had they not. But I think it was a confluence of wrong label, wrong time, just wrong everything.
Flooded time. I mean, think about it. By 96 and 97, like I assume that, well, actually I know a few examples where bands that had been signed in the rush after the hit of Smells Like Teen Spirit were already getting dropped. like in 95, 96. You were starting to get in the cutout bins because there was just such a glut, which often happens with a trend. And this was a trend, the alt Well, we'll just call it the alternative trend, for lack of any better word. They got caught in that, and that's too bad because a lot of good bands did. One of our favorites, and this is an earlier one, is Nude Swirl. You probably knew I was going to even say that,
Yeah, I
but
did.
that was a band and album. And granted, they're not technically a one and done band. They had one album before the Megaforce record, but Nude Swirl, in our opinion, and we might do a show on them one day, one of the greatest alternative metal, we'll call it, albums of all time. And it just, as far as I know, it sunk. I mean, a video got played on MTV for, I think, the song F Sharp. But God, what a great album. What an absolutely phenomenal album that still sounds good to to those of us that still know it and love it. I imagine Shum is sort of in the same realm for people that love it. So,
Well, and the Handsome record
there you
that,
go.
like that came out in 1997.
Yeah.
I always thought this should have been bigger, and it had Peter from Helmet, and I mean the band had a pedigree. But like you say, 96, 97, it was just so flooded, and also the nu metal stuff was on the ascent in terms of gaining the attention of younger listeners in that era.
Next big trend, yeah,
Yeah.
for better or for worse. Well, yeah, thanks for I finally gave you your 5 minutes to talk chum. We have talked about this point five for probably 100 episodes ago.
I'm grateful. Listen to the
Yeah.
record.
All right, man. We move on. Tune in just in a few days, actually. We're going to have episode 139 ready on Milwaukee's Realm. Thanks for listening.